Live from the front yard inside Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Monday night football, Monday night party here at the front yard at Ellis Island. Happy to be with you as always, Jeff Parles, Jonathan Von Tobel, in for Cofield here on Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno for this 4 o'clock hour, brought to you by Battleborn Lawyers. Get them here in Vegas, get them up in Reno as well. You know, let's just dive right in. Let's get the big four at four here on a Monday, and let's kick it off with number four.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Sunday afternoon, all right for fighting? That was at least what it was in Motown yesterday. Steelers beat the Lions in what is quite honestly one of the most bizarre endings I've ever seen. And made even more bizarre that I think the refs actually got it all correct at the end, with the Steelers upsetting the Lions and putting the Lions season on life support and pushing the Steelers ever so closer to an AFC North championship. But DK Metcalf, at the end of the first quarter, takes a swipe. I don't want to call it a punch. I'll call it a swipe at a Lions fan with a blue wig on. He gets a 2-game suspension, JVT. I have two questions here for you. What in the world were the Steelers support staffs doing on not seeing that Metcalf was somewhere he probably should not have been for an extended period of time? And two, are you surprised that it's only 2 games here for DK Metcalf?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you would think it'd be longer because you just want to set the precedent of you can't do these types of things. You cannot lash out at our fans. You cannot physically strike our fans, regardless of what may or may not have been said, which I don't know if you saw the new angle that came out where you can pretty clearly hear he's just calling him by his full name.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that Metcalf said, because that's a whole other topic of the dangers of Metcalf trying to lie about what happened and how that undercuts other athletes as you move forward when they make real claims about some of the things that are said to them, and nobody's going to believe what they're saying. But I'm with you. That's an angle I hadn't thought of. In the new angle, he moseys over there, and it takes him a while. He's clearly kind of making his way down, and for the team not to kind of see, like, hey, man, just kind of get out of there, and what are you doing? Granted, there's a lot going on in an NFL sideline, but I think you're right. I think the Steelers are lucky. They got a game with the Browns coming up where they can cinch everything up, essentially. And then he's going to be out for the one after that. They'll be pretty lucky that he's only going to miss 2 games here and not more.
And if the Ravens lose on Saturday night to Green Bay, Sunday doesn't even matter for Pittsburgh.
Correct.
The division's over. Yep. So this could be 2 preseason-esque games for the Steelers down the stretch. I think they're extraordinarily lucky he only got 2 games. That was my biggest takeaway. I was thinking when I saw the video, and especially where, forget that it was, if we saw it as like a fan video, it would have been one thing. You could have said, oh, there's all sorts of angles. CBS caught him. That's the thing.
It was almost immediately.
It was immediate. CBS caught him. Romo acted like it was the Malice at the Palace all over again, also on the broadcast. But I am surprised, based off the point you said, of you cannot do that to our fans. I am surprised it's only 2 games. And this is a massive favor to Pittsburgh, who, without Metcalf in a playoff game, I think, hey, look, it may not matter if Metcalf is there anyway. They're probably going to get schlacked by the Bills, assuming that's the round one opponent anyway. But if they didn't know Metcalf against Buffalo, they'd have absolutely no chance of winning that game. But still, kind of crazy that was the case. Also, Denzel Perryman also got 2 games for a helmet-to-helmet hit on Fournette yesterday in the Dallas game. I know that it's a multiple offense, but still kind of surprised. Chargers still live for the AFC West now with Denver's loss yesterday.
Shocking that a Harbaugh coach team has some underhanded tactics going on. It's almost like he's got a track record of letting his guys do whatever they want.
Number three. We touched it at the top of the show, but I want to give this a little more time right here, JVT, where the Raiders play quite possibly the perfect tank game yesterday. Absolutely perfect. They lose to Houston 23-21. Ashton Jeanty played probably his best game of the whole season yesterday against a high-end defense. Geno Smith throws a ghastly pick six to open the game. And the Texans, who, by the way, were absolutely dreadful yesterday, 4.4 yards per play. DeMeco Ryans kicking field goals on fourth and three or shorter three separate times. And they got away with it. And it's only because of the opponent they played. And JVT, this sets up quite possibly a once-in-a-lifer at Allegiant, where it could be the first ever NFL game you attend, against the Giants, where the winner of the game will put great detriment on their draft pick, and the loser of the game will be in complete command of the first overall pick, and for the Raiders, the opportunity of their pick of Dante Moore and Fernando Mendoza.
Yeah, I think the first point I would like to make is something that you mentioned in passing. Texans aren't winning anything, dude. I'm sorry. I don't buy it. The offense is abysmal. They have failed to reach over 5.5 yards per play in four out of the last six games. They're a below-average offensive line. They're a below-average offense. They've been awful. They can't run. They can't throw. Why am I supposed to believe that this team's good enough?
I just want to piggyback on that real quick because Cofield and I were talking about this after they beat Kansas City a few weeks ago, where, to me, they have the best unit in the AFC, which is their defense. But they are so bad on offense, as you just mentioned. And it's, look, they were better in the three games that Davis Mills played than they were at any point this year with Stroud. Now, I don't know if that's just CJ's having a down year, or if this is something for more concern down the line, or the fact that they've run the equivalent of the Scott Brooks offense in the NFL, where it's just basically a clock toiled offense. They do nothing creative. They have a top five wide receiver, and they don't do anything creative for Nico Collins. And also, I just mentioned it with Ryans. I think Ryans is a great culture head coach. I think he is a horrible in-game coach. And at some point in the postseason, he's going to do something stupid that costs him. So that's, I'm with you 100%. 2 weeks ago, I was all in on Houston. Now, no, not at all.
So the Raiders now have this big opportunity in front of them. I mean, again, you can't win this game. I know it's sad. I know a lot of people still have not come around to this, but you cannot do this. You are a franchise that has been stuck, not even in, actually, no, yeah, you've been stuck in purgatory for forever.
Yeah.
You've been floating around that, like, 6th to 11th slot in the draft. You haven't really hit on them, and frankly, you've wasted selections. Ashton Jeanty's a great player. Shockingly enough, as I and many have said, a good running back doesn't fix a bad running game, and that's exactly what has transpired for this team. You need to build. You need this pick. Even if you won't believe in Mendoza, you can ship it off if you want. You can trade back. You can do whatever you want. I think you probably take Mendoza because you just need a quarterback that you can build around. Either way, you need this to happen for you, man. I'm tired of hearing about this. I'm tired of watching them try to just grab some other quarterback off the scrap heap and make this thing work. It's not. You don't have that much talent on this team. You need to build.
And, again, they'll get KC next week also, which all of a sudden looks like a winnable game as well. So, yeah, you want to stack, as ridiculous as it sounds, but it's true. You stack two losses in a row, you have the first pick.
Mm-hmm.
You stack one loss, you are in danger of falling all the way to five because of the Browns, the Jets, the Cardinals all sitting there with similar wins and winning or I guess that would be strength of schedule percentage, which if the Raiders lose, they'll be the only one with 2-14 heading into week 18. Number two. College football playoff. We haven't mentioned this much today other than with Steve Kim in the last segment, JVT. Alabama absolutely clobbers Oklahoma after the first 20 minutes of the game. John Mateer was who we thought he was all year, or at least who I thought he was all year, which was not good.
I'd argue with clobber. I thought Alabama looked awful.
They clobbered him in the last 40 minutes.
Alabama's terrible, dude.
Look, I said at the beginning of the game when they were down 17-0, Oklahoma up 17-0, that it was embarrassing when Alabama, when they got in the field, and it's even more embarrassing now, and then every one person in Alabama tweeted at me for the next 24 hours. But that was day one. Then Miami beats Texas A&M. A&M gets held without a touchdown, 10-3, final. Brutal if you had the no touchdown in the game. And then the G5 schools come out. Tulane gets absolutely dusted by Ole Miss. And James Madison finds a way to cover the game.
Yep.
But while Oregon was still trying full blown, that game was not competitive either.
No, but I mean, you gave up 500 total yards in the game.
Yeah.
It's I don't think you're entirely impressed with Oregon or Alabama coming out of these matchups in which they played. Oregon, I mean, you go through the season. So they give up 500 total yards to James Madison in a game where they couldn't get their guys off the field in the sense of giving them some rest because they never really put them away. They led them and they kept them at arm's distance, but never impressively put them away. You go back over Oregon's season and you go, you know, took overtime against a bad Penn State team. You got walloped by Indiana, and that was a walloping. It was 30-20. You got sacked six times. Dante Moore got sacked six times.
Mendoza to throw the pick six. The game's a blowout.
Right. So that was pretty bad. You go out to Iowa, and you're in a scrap there. I don't know, man. Like, I'm not overtly impressed. And I'll say this. I'm going to start, even though I think he's a very good head coach, the Lanning slander could start here. If they go out to Texas Tech and take them on in Miami, and they get bum-rushed, which they could. Again, they had a problem with Indiana's front, and I think this front's better. Dude, that's going to be a pretty big black eye for Dan Lanning when it comes to the way he's had this program going.
No argument for me. And I picked Texas when the bracket was revealed, came on this show the day after. I said Texas Tech is winning the national championship. So everything I saw from Oregon, I feel really good about getting Texas Tech as an underdog in that game.
Sure.
Feel real good about that. And look, Ole Miss is probably going to get clobbered by Georgia. Alabama should lose to Indiana. Maybe it's a close game. And then Ohio State-Miami is fascinating. We'll have 10 days to talk about that. Number one. All right, Niners and Colts, about an hour away in Indianapolis. JVT, I got to do it because I know you have thoughts. If the Colts are close tonight, is Phillip Rivers the comeback player of the year favorite by the end of the night?
No. I mean, you know, no, actually, here's the thing. He might be because those markets have no idea what they're doing. They don't. For those who don't track these, especially the awards, the awards markets every single week in the NFL and in Major League Baseball every single day are a complete and utter guessing game. I will go to my favorite example ever from now 2 years ago when Jackson Merrill was minus 1,000 to an NL Rookie of the Year at one point over Paul Skeens. He got 7 first-place votes. These awards markets have no clue what these look like right now. And so, to your point, he could. He could actually be the favorite because they have no clue. But I'll say this, in reality, if Sam Darnold could have won it last year, none of these guys are going to win it going forward because the AP solidified their rules. They did leave the gray area with in other circumstances in the language. This could be considered other circumstances, but I think a lot of these writers have decided that that's not the case. But no shot he's winning Comeback Player of the Year.
Well, the guy who should win the award is playing in this game tonight.
Dak Prescott's playing?
I'm going Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, okay. I didn't think Dak was playing tonight.
I'm going Christian McCaffrey. That's
he's probably
going to
win.
Yeah, I think he should win. And again, I go back to what I said to you earlier in the show, where the Niners, if they win out, they get the one seed in an extraordinarily difficult NFC and an extraordinarily difficult division, maybe one of the best divisions ever. It's a massive game for San Francisco. Also, I will say ESPN got very lucky with the scheduling of this game going into the year because I didn't buy the Colts going in. And now they got the best human interest story in the NFL coming into this.
I mean, it's still a massive game for the Colts.
Yeah.
You are still statistically alive to make it into the postseason.
Nick Bogdanovich with Boomer Sportsbook. We're going to get the thoughts from him on this game and more when we get back. ESPN Las Vegas, Cofield and Company.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Back at Ellis Island, the front yard, gearing up for our Monday night party. Got some, if you come on down to Ellis Island from 6 to 8, got some, we got a lot of swag here tonight, JVT. A lot of station swag.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I just realized that. Yeah, quite a bit.
A
t-shirts.
Lot.
People freak out about the t-shirts.
People love t-shirts, koozies. A lot of good stuff.
You know, I'm never a big koozie user.
Are you a big beer guy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I just don't.
I didn't know if that was your drink of choice.
Never used koozie. Well, I mean, they're all my drink of choice.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Right now, I'm still feeling the effects of the poison named tequila from last night.
Oh. That's a lengthy length there. Can't think of a better word. That's good. Of course, when you come down to Ellis Island, you can bet with the Boomers Sportsbook as well. And Nick Bogdanovich, of course, with Boomers, joins us right now. Nick, what are we looking at here tonight with this Niner-Colt game? See that it's 4 now with San Francisco on the road in Indianapolis.
Yeah, good game, good action. So we opened this thing as high as 6. It's all the way down to 4. So obviously the money's on the Colts. Total's getting really good action as well. Opened at 46.5, down to 46, and now up to 47. So like I said, great game, great action.
Where do you anticipate, if any, buyback that will happen here, Nick? Do you think that will you get to 3.5? Will there be buyback there? Or is this just going to be 4 and we're going to head in one direction all night or kickoff?
Yeah, you know what? I think you might see a little buyback at 4. The public is leaning toward the 49ers. Whether the professionals buy back at 4 is another story. But I do think you'll see some recreational money this last hour on the 49ers.
Nick, let's go to Christmas. Boy, these matchups really look pretty good when they came out. Not so much now, but let's start Dallas officially done playing out the string. 6.5-point favorites in D.C. against possibly Josh Johnson for the Commanders.
Yeah, some real three stinkers. Yeah, three backup quarterbacks. So who knows? Maybe one of the three will play a heck of a game and create an upset, but yeah, we opened Dallas 5.5 last night, got bet up to 6.5. So the Sharps obviously think Mariota's going to miss. But I just read an injury report. He's day-to-day, so I wouldn't rule him out. But it does look like it might be Johnson.
What about some of these others that we're going to see here? How much – it's always a fascinating dynamic. How much do you downgrade a team like Minnesota when the quarterback that is being replaced is one of the worst in the league?
It's really, really hard, especially when it's me involved, because I think he's really terrible. And some people think he's halfway decent and plays okay at times. But, yeah, Minnesota hasn't quit. I mean, their defense was ferocious yesterday. I think Jackson Dart got hit 23,000 times, and I think he threw for 65 yards in an NFL game, which I didn't think was possible, but that's what happened. So, the defense plays really hard for Flores. Whether that, McCarthy's backup when he played at Seattle was absolutely horrible, but that was at Seattle against Seattle's defense. Even he can look halfway decent indoors against the Lions' defense, which is non-existent. So I don't think it's that much of a difference this week, even though there has been a little Detroit money so far.
Nick, the primetime game on Christmas, I thought this was going to be a gigantic game. It turns out that it's Kansas City with their third quarterback, and it just looks weird, even though it feels right, with Denver almost laying 2 touchdowns at Arrowhead in this one.
Yeah, well, we opened 12.5 last night, and they laid it. It went to 13, so at least the kid got some reps at Tennessee. That'll help him. I think he went to South Dakota or South Dakota State, one of them, but he's an older guy for no NFL experience. I think he's like 28, but yeah, at least he got some reps. Denver will be obviously snorting mad after that loss at Jacksonville. They still want to get that one seed, and KC didn't put up much fight. But I think KC will put up a better effort this week. This is their division rival in their own stadium. So I don't think they'll want to be embarrassed by the Broncos. But, yeah, when was the last time KC was a 13-point dog at home? Quite a while, I'd imagine.
Well, we might get a battle of the backups that's somewhat interesting on Saturday, Baltimore and Green Bay. How do you think this plays out?
Yeah, Malik Willis looked pretty good.
Yep.
And Tyler Huntley's serviceable. So, yeah, that would be a good one. Even though it's funny, I just read a Lamar thing, and it wouldn't shock me if Lamar played this week. It's a bad back contusion, but it sounded like he has a chance to go this week. So, yeah, very important game, obviously, for the Ravens and the Packers. So definitely one of the better games of the week. I sort of lean Ravens in this one.
The other Saturday game, it's also great that the NFL decided to basically take 2 of the 3 best games on Sunday and put them on Saturday and leave us with whatever that card is on Sunday. But this is interesting. Houston at Chargers. One and a half here you guys got right now with Boomers, Nick.
Yeah, that's what we opened too. We haven't read any action on it yet, but definitely an interesting game. Battle of the defenses, I guess. I mean, Houston looked really poor offensively yesterday against the Raiders, and they shut them down. I think they got one offensive score, and that came real late. So they're going to have to do better than that. They still have hopes of chasing down Jacksonville for the division, but that sure got hurt yesterday. So, yeah, but a heck of a game. Two of the better defenses in the game. And we'll see if Houston can slow down this Charger offense that's getting better by the week.
From a power rating standpoint, you know, with these two teams, are they equals to you? Because I was just kind of complaining to Jeff here that I hate this Houston offense with a passion that is very, very burning.
Yeah, I got them pretty close to even. I mean, Houston really missed Woody Marks yesterday. He's been running the ball really well. They had to play a backup and the slow Nick Chubb. So definitely hurts the running game when he's out. But Stroud looked lost yesterday when he had put together a couple of good games. But I thought their offense was trending in the right direction, but they certainly took a step back yesterday.
Nick Bogdanovich with us right now, Boomer Sportsbook. Of course, if you come on down to Ellis Island, you can bet with Boomers here today. Nick, just going to Sunday, Carolina beat Tampa on Sunday. This game is almost, unless if Tampa, even if Tampa loses, it would take a Carolina victory to finish off the NFC South. Seattle off, obviously, the game of the year. They win that in overtime. Seahawks, big favorites on the road, 7 in this one in Charlotte.
Yeah, it looks big. I think it helps them that they're getting Carolina coming off the Tampa war for the division, and they got the extra 2 days off the Ram fiasco. So it does look big to me, though. I mean, Carolina's beaten some pretty good teams this year, and I think Seattle is going to be missing a few defensive players. So interesting game, definitely a hell of a game. I'd like to see what Sam Darnold can do. He can play a little better down the stretch.
All right. Let's not bury the headlines here. Come on now. The best game of the week, Nick, is Giants and Raiders out here in Las Vegas. The storylines, the dynamic play. What are we going to do? I mean, I think this – did you guys open favorite as favorite in New York? Did it flip? Or how did you guys see this in terms of the opener to where we're at right now?
Yeah, it did flip. Last night we opened the Giants 2, and now the Raiders are 1, so – everyone was impressed with the Raiders' effort yesterday and shocked how bad the Giants looked yesterday against the Redskins at home. So, yeah, money for the Raiders early. But, yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to watch this one, but I may have to glimpse at it when it's coming down the fourth quarter.
It's only one of two games. We were talking about this in the schedule, the afternoon window. It's this one in Buffalo and Philly.
Yeah, I know. They love to do that when Buffalo or Philly has a primetime game in the afternoon. They like to have as few games as possible. They want all eyes on that one. So, the NFL loves doing that.
Speaking of that Philly and Buffalo game, what are you guys looking at right now?
Yeah, it's like 2.5 points. You know, I don't know what to make of the game. I mean, Philly's, you know, they're sort of locked in. They won their division. You know, Buffalo, their chances of winning their division are slim and none. So I think they just like to get out of the next 2 weeks healthy and get ready for the playoffs because they're not going to win that division. I mean, New England would have to stumble as a 13-point favorite against the Jets. So, but, you know, a great game. I guess they're truly professionals. I mean, Allen and Hurts and the whole cast. So I guess they'll bring it. But if I was Buffalo, I'd be trying to get out of there as healthy as humanly possible.
How do you guys handle games, Chicago and San Francisco? Obviously, the 49ers have yet to play. For our audience, will you take the game down, and what are you expecting? What outside of injuries will change a number for a team that has yet to play versus a team that's sitting back and waiting?
Yeah, as soon as the game starts tonight, that game will come off the board and then be put up when it's over, barring any quarterback injury or serious injury. But yeah, at this point, unless the team looks really, really good or really, really bad, there won't be much of a change. It would have to be a really outstanding or horrific effort, because if it's just a normal effort, it's not going to change much.
like performing elder abuse in front of all of America tonight, the 49ers?
Oh, yeah. You know, to be honest with you, this is one game I'm interested in watching. I want to see if Rivers can do anything against the Niners. And I always like watching the Niners. I'm a McCaffrey fan. And you never know what you're going to get with Purdy. He might throw for four touchdowns or four picks. You just never know.
He's Nick Bogdanovich, of course, Boomer Sportsbook here, three properties across the valley, including here at Ellis Island. Nick, pleasure as always. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Nick Bogdanovich. Boy, it's interesting. Coming down, you're betting the Colts. Yeah. Down to four.
I mean, I figured like 5.5, 6, probably the play. Indy's going to try to stay inside of the number, but eat up the clock, and maybe that gets you inside of the number by default.
More Cofield and Company coming your way next, ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the front yard inside Ellis Island. On ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
Back at the front yard, Ellis Island. ESPN, Las Vegas, ESPN, Reno, here for the 4 o'clock hour. Jeff Parles and JVT in for Cofield. You'll hear Cofield tomorrow, live from Frisco, Texas. As we learned earlier, neither JVT or I have been to the Dallas area before. So there you go.
No, I don't think
I've been. And you lived in a town that had named after a human being in Texas.
Yeah.
Could be Tyler, could be Austin, could be.
Austin sounds right. That was two.
I mean,
you know, I don't really remember.
San Antonio's technically named after someone.
That's a good point. That's actually a very good point.
So there you go.
It was a one word name, though. I know that.
Houston, Sam Houston. Yeah. There
no,
we go.
No offense
I'm,
to,
I'm just naming all Texas cities.
No offense to St. Anthony, but it was not San Antonio.
So JVT, you are one of the bigger NBA guys that I know. And the infringing on the Christmas holiday by the NFL has been met with anger from NBA people. But with the way that this Christmas schedule has devolved for the National Football League, here are the games, by the way. The eliminated Dallas Cowboys against the eliminated Washington Commanders, who very likely will either start, Mariota's day-to-day, but I would be surprised if he plays on a short week, could very easily have either Josh Johnson of auto insurance commercial fame.
Good commercial.
Yep. Or Sam Hartman, very handsome man, but still not an NFL caliber quarterback. The Detroit Lions are at the Minnesota Vikings. Lions are playing for their lives all of a sudden, and it may not even matter what they do. Green Bay wins one of their last two, they're done. And it's very possible Max Brosmer plays for the Vikings. And then you have the Broncos at the Chiefs. Yeah, Denver is the best record, time for the best record in the NFL entering the game, but the Chiefs are playing a guy who I can't even pronounce his last name correctly.
Oladokun.
There you go. So, here are the NBA games on Christmas, JVT. Cavs at Knicks. Knicks, arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference. Cavs, down year so far, but still very talented and very capable. The Spurs and the Thunder, a game we saw here in Las Vegas last week, and boy, did that deliver.
It's great.
Here in Vegas. The Mavs and the Warriors, hey, it's Steph Curry, it's Cooper Flagg. You get some fun names.
Mavs are playing better. Cooper Flagg's been incredible.
Yep. You get the Lakers and the Rockets. Rockets, legitimately excellent team. Lakers are the Lakers with two of the most recognizable names, if not the two most recognizable names in the NBA. And then the Nuggets host the Timberwolves. JVT, there's a chance here that the NBA can take some of that territory back this week.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a temporary land grab, though, considering
that's better than what it could have been.
No, the schedule's great on the surface, outside of, like you mentioned. By the way, I'd argue with you, not arguably, the Knicks are the best team in the Eastern Conference. Is something
fine
I would
me.
Say. Yeah.
I want it to be tepid, but yeah.
So there's a chance the Cavs maybe get rolled in the early game because they haven't not played well. They've been very injured, but regardless, all these games look absolutely fantastic. NBA is doing the right thing, too, and getting some of their young stars out there, which we can see a little bit more of, and just the stars in general with these games. I think this has got to be it, man. Like, you can sit there and, look, make no ifs, ands, or buts about it. No bones. The NFL will beat the NBA in ratings on Thursday. Sure. There's really not a question about that. But if you can carve into that a little bit and kind of show a little bit more of, hey, this is our product. We've been doing a pretty good job. We were just front and center for all of you in the NBA Cup just a few weeks ago, and now here we are again with the big stage for all of you to watch on a Christmas Day when you're sitting around at home and all of a sudden the Lions are blowing out the Vikings or that game stinks and it's 3-0, whatever it is. Well, why don't you flip over and watch Mavericks Warriors and see Cooper Flagg, the number one overall pick and the great white hope of the Dallas area. I think that's all pretty good for the NBA. This should be a good week. This should be a good day for them. I would assume that this is going to be one of their better ratings days, or Christmas days, I should say, in the last few years.
Super excited to see Wemby against the Thunder again.
Absolutely.
Spurs took him out here in Vegas last week. Get a chance to do it again in Oklahoma City. Boy, record-setting Thunder might not be able to get there at this point. Jesse Merrick, he joins us next to talk some Raiders, Silver and Black Sports Network here on Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas, and ESPN Reno.
Live from Ellis Island Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Welcome back in, Cofield and Company. Jeff Parles and JVT in for Cofield here tonight. You'll hear Cofield tomorrow from 3 to 5, and then Rebel pregame coverage begins at 5, and then the Rebels take on the Ohio Bobcats in the Frisco Bowl tomorrow at 6. Fascinating game. Bowl season is incredible at this point, JVT, because I love betting college football more than I like betting the NFL in the regular season, and I have placed a grand total of 0 non-playoff game bets so far in the bowl season.
I could do without it.
I've been very, very disciplined, which is honestly I'm more proud of myself more than anything.
It should be. I grew up out here, so I was never into the pomp and circumstance of college football.
That makes sense.
Watch UNLV get smoked every single year.
Well, see, maybe your kid will grow up a big college football fan with the Rebels being good.
Yeah.
Now joining us, Jesse Merrick, Silver and Black Sports Network. For something a little bit different than UNLV, the UNLV football of old for what the Raiders have been this year. Jesse, that was quite possibly the perfect tank for a draft pick game yesterday.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, if you're many Raiders fans obviously rooting to be able to hold on to draft positioning, like, that's exactly what you could be hoping for in terms of a competitive loss, you know, and doing it against, you know, one of the better teams in the league right now, or at least the hottest team in the league. Right now with what the Texans have done and how good that defense is, you know, just real building blocks for this team, at least to be able to point to something like, hey, look, they finally got the running game going. And like, this is a peak at, I think, what this team hoped to be, just for many reasons, never quite transpired. So yeah, that's a win in all accounts for the Raiders, given the fact that they're sitting as a 2-win team right now.
Do we get a sense of in the building what the mentality is with this balancing game of Pete Carroll maybe coaching for his job while also looking directly in the face of having the number one overall pick?
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's more so, I think, Pete Carroll battling against the fan base. And obviously, look, the front office wants the top pick and everything like that. But the fan base is like sitting there like, oh, my God, it's going to be the most Raiders thing is that they find a way to win one or two of these last two games. Or Pete Carroll, again, coaching every game like it's a Super Bowl because he, again, reading the writing on the wall, whether it's coaching for his job or quite possibly coaching his last games as a coach in the NFL, you know, he doesn't want to go out like that either. So it's one of those things where these last two games are going to be like a white-knuckle ride for so many fans trying to get in there. And, again, there's always that weird deal when teams are at this point in the season because, you know, from the front office standpoint, you want to see that. You want to see him throw the young guys in there for the development aspect of it, and then you know that that's going to be very likely a chance to be able to get that top pick. Because, you know, as guys are developing, the chances of winning a lot of these games aren't too high. This time now, you go and look at it, and, like, the Giants are a bad team. I do think the Raiders can and will lose that game. It's the game against the Chiefs that really gets me, where I'm sitting there looking at the fact that they could quite possibly be down to their third quarterback in that game. And obviously the fact that they're out of it, Andy Reid realizing, like, hey, if we find a way to lose this game and stop the Raiders from possibly getting their quarterback of the future, that's big for them in the division and everything like that. So in terms of the rivalry, that adds a ton of intrigue into that last game.
It's very funny how this has all played out, where I think, Jesse, I'm in agreement with you, even though, I mean, the Giants were laughably terrible yesterday against Minnesota, even though Minnesota only won the game by three. But it's that Chiefs game all of a sudden where I'm kind of with you. I think Jackson Dart will find a way to make a few plays. Giants, I mean, Brian Burns has had an amazing season on a horrible team. I don't know how the Raiders are going to block him on Sunday.
Yeah.
But that Chiefs game, I mean, Kansas City got blasted yesterday by the Titans, who are terrible. And now, I mean, look, it's and that's just one of those games where I know there'll be a lot of people who are conflicted. I think the three of us are kind of in the same boat as like, hey, you get the first pick and get to pick who your quarterback is. That's by far the only thing that needs to come out of these last two games at this point.
Yeah, and that's what many fans are hoping for. But, you know, I was actually talking with Seth Payne, who used to play defensive line for the Texans back in the day. And we were just kind of talking about the Texans and their whole rebuild, you know, because it wasn't that long ago the Texans were in a similar place that the Raiders were, at the bottom of the league, just a mess overall. And they ended up winning, one or a couple of the final games of the season and missed out on getting the top pick. That top pick ended up being Bryce Young, and instead they go and get C.J. Stroud. In hindsight, it's like, hey, that worked out perfectly for them. I know Bryce is kind of coming along a little bit more, and the Panthers have turned it around, but with how bad it was at the start for him, and then look what CJ did when he got there. So it's one of those things where, like, you really never quite know until it's all said and done, until it's happened, you figure out who the quarterback is. But that big question now is going to be, like, okay, who ends up being that top guy? If it's the Giants end up getting the top pick, I mean, I'd imagine they'd probably trade out of that pick. So maybe someone like the Jets comes in there and, you know, scoops the Raiders on the, whether it's Mendoza or Dante Moore. I know Mendoza is kind of the leader in the clubhouse right now for many people when they talk about the first overall pick. I'm going to be real curious to see what it looks like in the college football playoff in terms of who emerges in these next couple weeks coming out of these couple of games here in terms of who really shows out. Because for Dante Moore, he's that guy that doesn't really have the resume in terms of a ton of starts, only 18 starts to his name, and he's only 20 years old, but has all the upside in the world, whereas Mendoza, we've seen him do it at a couple different spots, and obviously at the level he's done at Indiana now. So I'm real fascinated in, one, do they lock down the top overall pick, then which quarterback do they choose? And if they don't, how does it work out? Who actually does go first between those two quarterbacks? Because right now I do think it's a toss-up, and there's a lot of people thinking that the upside of Dante Moore, even though he doesn't have the resume, is actually worth taking him ahead of Mendoza.
So we saw earlier in the season Chip Kelly got fired, obviously. What other changes would you expect coming down after this season for the Las Vegas Raiders, whether it be big with Pete Carroll, maybe even something smaller along the staff?
Yeah, I personally am expecting them to clean house on the coaching staff. You know, again, I know we're talking coming off of a game where they actually showed some building blocks against a good team, and that was the storyline coming out of this one. But I just think overall, as the year has gone, like, this was, you know, obviously Pete came in and wanted to be the win now guy, but this was the year that I think a lot of people thought the Raiders would have a record above 500 and be able to point to some real building blocks going forward, at least throughout the course of a season, and say, okay, Pete's the guy to come in, lay that foundation, and then they ultimately have somebody else come in. That obviously blew up with Chip Kelly. Maybe he was going to be a guy that could possibly be a coach in waiting. That didn't work out. Look how bad the defense has been as a whole this season, you know, with Patrick Graham, who at one point was a really hot name as well. So I think it's honestly, given Pete's age and the amount of work that it's probably going to take, I mean, let's be honest, the Raiders are probably at least 2 years away from being a team that could possibly compete for anything. Like, there's a lot of work and a lot of talent that needs to be added to this roster. So given all of that, given Pete's age and just how bad it's been this year, I think it's probably smart for the coaching staff, for the organization to move on from Pete and find somebody that's a younger guy that can actually be here. And whoever that next guy is, you do have to give them time, because it has been this wash, rinse, repeat of firing and hiring coaches left and right. And you can see now, one, the guys that have been there haven't been able to develop, and two, they've botched a lot of draft picks over the years, too, because they keep bringing in, you know, new GMs and stuff like that as well. So you need continuity between the GM and the coaching staff to be able to draft guys that the coaching staff wants and fits their system and let them develop. So I'd like to see John Spicek be able to pick his guy, because I always thought it was kind of a weird marriage with him and Pete anyway. So let him pick somebody that fits what he wants and what his vision is for the franchise, and then let that synergy kind of take off and see what that looks like, you know, 2 to 4 years down the road after they've had some time to develop. But right now I just think there's too much work to be done, and Pete Carroll's runway is a little bit shorter than I think it needs to be.
Jesse Merrick, Silver and Black Sports Network with us right now here on Cofield and Company.
But my follow-up is going to be, Jesse, do you think that the team understands that that's what they need to do? Because every single action over the last few years has been, as I keep saying, trying to build the plane while it's in the air, trading for Geno Smith, you know, kind of spinning your wheels. I do wonder if they actually buy that, or if it's going to be another offseason where let's get another franchise, or excuse me, a stopgap at quarterback. Let's just try to sign some free agents. Let's just try to see that. Does Mark Davis actually understand that, you think?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. Like, that's a great take, because it has been that whole, like, oh, no, we can win now. We've got the pieces to do it. We just need the right coach, and we need the right quarterback, or the Band-Aid, or whatever it is. Yep. And it just hasn't worked. And so I think, honestly, this year, as bad as it has been, as laughable as it's been at times, I think this is probably the breaking point for Mark Davis, but even more so now the fact that Tom Brady is involved in the organization. Now you hear the reports that he's going to be much more involved and all those different things. I just think, one, Tom Brady is a dude that has been involved in so much winning. He doesn't want to be associated with something like this. So you better believe he's going to do whatever he can to try and fix that. And some of this is his doing. Don't get me wrong. Like I've said multiple times, the blame does need to be placed partially on Brady because all the reports in the offices were how involved he was. But I think he needs to be involved more on a day-to-day basis. I know he's got so many different things going on. But I think Brady will be able to get his ear a bit more and it'll be like, hey, look, there does need to be a foundation set that can actually build for the future. I think as bad as it was, that this is going to be that kind of breaking point where they realize, okay, no, we can't do this whole let's build and win now at the same time. It's got to be a, hey, we have to commit to a rebuild. And I think they've gotten to that point where they realize that. If not, I don't know what it's going to take to get them to that point.
Jesse, this may seem like a totally wild question with everything that's transpired, and especially if the Raiders are picking at the top of the draft. Let's assume they end up with either Moore or Mendoza. Is Geno Smith on this roster next year, or is it a different veteran quarterback with that rookie?
Yeah, see, entering the season, I would have said that's a wild question, but now, given the way things have transpired for him, I don't think that's a crazy question, and I do think the smart move for them is to move on. One, on the field, you've seen just the turnover numbers. Obviously, they've been out of this world for him, and I believe he's now thrown like 40-something picks since like 2022. The number's crazy. I forget the exact number off the top of my head. But it's worked out horribly in terms of that. And then you also have just the team and how much they've struggled, the fact that he's attached to Pete Carroll and him flipping off the fans too. Like, it's just been like a comedy of errors when you add all that stuff up, and just as horrible of a marriage as you could possibly imagine. So for me, I just think all those things given – hit the reset button for everybody. And I do think Geno's a good dude. I think he's a better quarterback than he's shown this year. So I think a reset and a move on for him would be the best bet. Also, too, if I remember right, in terms of the money, I think the faster you move on from him now, I believe it's only like an $18.5 million hit in terms of dead cap if you do it before March, I think, is the date on that one. Whereas if you hold on to him, that number goes up a lot more. So I think the smart move, cut the dead weight, for lack of a better word, and just – wipe the slate clean overall when you do the new coaching staff, new quarterback, all of those things. Because also, too, like, let's be real, if you draft a quarterback that high, you know, top 1 to 3 picks, you got to play the kid at least the way it is in today's NFL.
I have, since the start of the 2022 season, 51 interceptions for Geno Smith.
51, jeez.
So, not that great of a number here. All right, so as we move forward, then I'm going to be curious, if we go with this total rebuild, I know this is an old question that a lot of Raiders fans get their backs up about. Is Max Crosby on the roster next year?
Yeah, see, so I think he is, and I totally get the argument of like why you would trade him in terms of getting a boatload of picks and all of that. What does the return actually look like? And it comes up so much. I think that's the guy you keep and you build around. Like I said, I was talking with Seth Payne about how the Texans did it. And obviously they had a ton of picks to be able to, you know, build up around them, and got the coach right and all those different things. But one of those picks was Will Anderson. You know, you get a game-changing defensive end and you can build a defense around them. The Raiders already have that guy. So don't get rid of that dude. I mean, this dude, like, if you went into a lab and designed what you wanted out of that position on the field, it'd be Max Crosby. And then you go ahead and throw in like the motor and just how much this guy like puts on for the franchise and just loves it. And he just fits as a Raider. Like, match made in heaven right there. I don't think sending that guy out the door helps you, no matter what you get in return, unless it was like 3 first-round picks, which I don't think is coming. I just think you keep him, build around him, because that guy, you know you can count on him down in and down out to do his thing. So I don't think it would make sense to trade a Max Crosby right now, because we've seen what that story has looked like in the past already for the Raiders when they tried that with Khalil Mack. Obviously different staff and front office and all those things, but they botched all of those picks. Keep the guy, find a way to build around him.
Jesse Merrick, Silver and Black Sports Network. Thank you, Jesse, as always. Back with more Cofield and Company.